Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. Warehouses, the mayoral election, and a new approach to downtown. Lead producer Emily Means joins me to round up the biggest stories in our little city. It's Friday, March 10th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Emily Means, the legislative session is over, which means we are now in control of our own destinies.
And we can all breathe a sigh of relief, I guess.
And in case you blinked and missed it, we did a two-parter this week recapping everything the legislature did to impact the lives of Salt Lakers, from the Great Salt Lake to a little news about the gondola, the proposed gondola up Little Cottonwood Canyon, to housing, homelessness, you name it. So go back and give that a listen if you haven't, because in just 40 minutes total, you can get caught up on 45 days worth of work.
What a great deal, Allie.
You know what? And if you call in the next 10 minutes, we'll throw in three interviews with our mayoral candidates.
And a sticker.
And a sticker. Okay. Before we get into new news this week, Em, I want to give a little bit of an update. We'll call this update corner, because there are two stories that we talked about last week that I've got new news to pile on to about them. One is I think broke the story last week that the West Wendover City Council, which is, if you're not interested in cheap liquor or non-medical cannabis, then maybe you've never been to West Wendover or gambling. But if you like any of those three things, then you've definitely taken a road trip an hour and 45 minutes west of Salt Lake City to West Wendover, where a Planned Parenthood from California was hoping to get a conditional use permit to build an abortion clinic on the border of Utah and Nevada, of course, assuming that abortion is going to get a heck of a lot harder to access in this state, probably as soon as this year. Of course, important to note, right now in Utah, abortion is legal and safe up to 18 weeks and accessible. So the West Wendover City Council was hearing this conditional use permit request on Tuesday evening, and the council said no, no permit, no abortion clinic. But then the mayor said no and vetoed them. So where does that put things? A bit of a sticky wicket, because of course councils don't like being vetoed by mayors. And so basically, as I understand it now, this conditional use permit is kind of back at square one.
Which is never great for planning decisions. Like, it takes a really long time to make your way through a city's land use processes.
Yeah, it's a lot of red tape. So we'll see where this story goes from here. Of course, we will keep you updated if there is new news. But I did want to share that because I know a lot of people heard that on our show last week and were like, oh my God, what's the scoop? And then the other thing I want to give an update on that you and I talked about last week, Emily, is three members of the Salt Lake County Council voting against granting $61,000 to Salt Lake City to resettle Afghan refugees, which, important to note, that did pass because there's seven members of the Salt Lake County Council and four of them voted for it. But it was such a strange choice, right? Because, like, even the governor, didn't Governor Cox write a letter being like,
oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, we would like as many Afghan refugees as possible in this state.
Right. This had us scratching our heads for sure. And especially because they didn't provide any reason for their vote. I was really surprised by how quickly that item was heard, voted on, and then we were out the door.
Well, I got some clarity. So before you and I talked last Friday, I, of course, emailed all three of these council members, Councilmember Sheldon Stewart, Dave Alvord, and Dia Theodore. And I said, you know, hey, press request, just curious why you all took this vote, because you didn't give a statement, so I don't have anything I can quote you on to understand why you took this vote. And I got a response from one of those council members this week, Dia Theodore, and she told me, I'm going to partially quote here. In the beginning, she was like, Salt Lake County has always been a welcoming place for refugees. I support the county's efforts to assist refugees. Kind of laid out that generally, like, her vote was not against Afghan refugees in her mind, right? But then she said, and here's a quote, I voted against spending these after I learned that these funds came from a grant from a foundation controlled by George Soros. I'm concerned that this fact was not adequately disclosed to the council when we were asked to accept these funds. In the same meeting, I requested that the administration supply the council with more information about the source of grant funds and the requirements placed in the county when we accept any private funding.
I think a lot of people would probably call that an anti-Semitic dog whistle, mentioning George Soros as a reason for not approving funding that will help refugees in your community. Also, I did want to say, last week I was questioning whether this funding was federal funding that the county had already received. We looked at the staff report, and yes, like, this funding was coming from this particular foundation, which was founded by billionaire philanthropist George Soros. But if you don't know anything about him, he's like a full-on boogeyman for right-wing conspiracy theorists. So it was quite shocking to see that from one of our locally elected officials.
Right. Yeah. The foundation is the Open Society Foundation. And I think the question that I think this sort of raises for some people is like, well, who do you accept funds from and why? Right. Like, do you take the money even if you fundamentally disagree with someone? Now, we can't have that conversation without the important context that you brought up, Emily, which is that this person's name is used as a political dog whistle. I saw someone comment and they were like, well, if this money was from the Koch brothers, you know, I feel like Democrats would be voting against using these funds. And I'm like, I don't know. The Koch brothers basically are the sole funders of Smithsonian museums, and I go to those every chance that I get. So I don't think that that argument necessarily holds water. And councils have work sessions before they take these kinds of votes. So usually by the time the meeting is happening, everyone kind of knows how the vote is going to go on the council, which means that these council members knew that this funding was going to pass. They chose to vote against it in order clearly to send some sort of a message, is my analysis. And so that message is, we don't want money from this boogeyman. And, you know, they said the quiet part out loud. So there it is. Now we know. Now we know why at least one of them took that vote. We can't assume that Councilmember Theodore is speaking for the other two members, though they have not replied to my request. So
yeah, I appreciate that Councilmember Theodore responded to our request. I just think, you know, if that's the stance you're going to take, make the comment during the vote, you know, get it on the record.
Right. Get it on the record so that the public can hear it during the time in which they're supposed to hear it, not so that I have to send a follow-up email that you respond to a week later.
Speaking of councils, the Salt Lake City Council met this week and I believe had a very, very long meeting. There were like 3 hours of public comment at this meeting. And I saw a bunch of tweets that were like, if there was any question whether Parks and Rec is a documentary or not, just watch the Salt Lake City Council meeting. And I gotta tell you, that's actually one of my favorite things about local government meetings is how much it reminds me of Parks and Rec. But anyway, Salt Lake City Council met to discuss a wide variety of topics, including the North Point Small Area Plan. Did you know about this, Allie? Have you ever heard about this before this week?
Not once.
Me neither.
And North Point Small Area Plan, to me, you know, sometimes your brain makes these like weird connections and you look at something and it is what it is for you. And it's because of your life experience. Every time I see this written out, my brain says the North Point Small Area Rodent.
My brain says North Point Small Area Plan. I'm like, woof, Could we have slapped a sexy name on this just to like pique people's interest? Yeah. So let me tell you about this plan. Basically, it would create a warehouse district in Salt Lake's North Point area, which is between the Salt Lake City International Airport and the city's northern boundary. Carter Williams from KSL had a really great write-up on this in anticipation of this meeting. Right now, the area is mostly zoned for agricultural uses, and there are some people who currently live there. But businesses have shown that they want to build warehouses and distribution centers there. So this is something that has environmental advocates up in arms. They're really worried about the Great Salt Lake wetlands, which are nearby. They're worried about air quality. And the mayor, actually, Mayor Mendenhall, also sent a letter to the Salt Lake City Council asking them to limit the distribution that will be allowed there. You know, she's an air quality advocate as well, so I'm sure that that's kind of setting off alarm bells in her head. But this was interesting to me because I just figured this would be included in the inland port area. You know, we always talk about the Northwest Quadrant as where the inland port will be located, which is basically a giant distribution hub. So I guess it kind of makes sense.
This is a little bit north, as I understand it. Like, the inland port is west of the airport, and this is, and north. So it kind of would put a warehouse hat on the inland port.
Very fashionable.
The thing that I think is really interesting about this conversation that, again, like you said, activists have brought up, specifically Save Our Great Salt Lake and Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, is like, okay, the inland port already would create a district just a little bit south of here that is sort of, as we say in journalism, TK to come, that would offer 152 million square feet of warehouse development. Do we really need to extend that? Do we really need more warehouse development? And do we really need it next to wetlands and a dying and drying Great Salt Lake? Like, can we just pause on this and have a little bit more of an assessment before we move forward with granting this? And frankly, like, kind of a valid question from the apparently more than 60 people who showed up and spoke at this meeting on Tuesday about this. Because, you know, when we think about offering public subsidies and incentives to these developers in the first place, we're well within our right to ask these kinds of questions. The other thing that comes up a lot when we talk about the inland port is this question that I'm honestly really interested in, which is, are warehouse jobs good jobs? Like, if the big case for this kind of development, this kind of warehouse development, is job creation and economic stimulus, then I think we should talk about whether or not warehouse jobs are good jobs, because historically they're low paying, they're grueling. It seems like some of the oversight is like weird and poorly enforced. So I think that's also a question worth asking when we think about where we're directing public funds to development, which, look, we love seeing business growth in our city, like, to match population growth. But where and why and how?
I think that there is some disagreement on the city council that kind of hinges on that, too. Well, we have a lot of more progressive-leaning people on the council. I'm sure they really understand that environmental argument. What I think we're hearing from council member Victoria Petro-Eschler is that there is a need for more economic development in that area. You know, like, the residents who live there, maybe they would like access to jobs that are closer to home. And I mean, I think you're exactly right. Like, are these the jobs that we want there? I was thinking about that and I was like, well, what other jobs could we put there? Like, what are some natural fits in that area? And I don't know. Like, I haven't
Do
even
I look
been
like
out
an
to
economist?
The North Point area. You're not an economist. I'm not an economist. It's not our job to create jobs. But yeah, I am really curious about what the residents think. What would they like to see in their neighborhood?
Well, basically what the council decided on Tuesday to put a bow on this is to kick the can down the road, which is often what happens when 60 people show up to a public comment session. So we will hear more from them on this. It feels like they're going back to the drawing board a little bit. They meet every week, so the news could come fast, the news could come slow. Something the council did finally decide on.
Bwah, 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 bwah.
Pew, 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 pew. Ranked choice voting.
Yes, they did.
It's happening, folks. That is how we will be electing our even-numbered city council seats and our mayor this fall. One ballot, one day, 200,000 residents. Ranked choice voting. What could go wrong?
Yeah, we're doing it live, buddy. So what this means is there will be no primary. And I don't know, Allie, for us as journalists, you know, media covering these races, that it's kind of weird because that means there's nothing until November, yeah. Until the November general election. You know, there's nothing to kind of like gear up mm-hmm. for and be like, okay, we've got this many candidates right now. Who's going to make it through? It's kind of weird territory for us to be in, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of eerie because, well, ranked choice voting is a little bit of a rodeo. And basically, for anyone who isn't familiar with ranked choice voting, the way that it works is you get a ballot, it lists all the candidates, and instead of picking one, you rank from first to last your preference, your faves, right? So when they do the first count, if an overwhelming majority of people have the same number one choice for mayor, then that's the mayor. But if it's kind of split, then they remove the bottom person and they take the second choice from the other people's whatever, and they kind of like move it around. Basically, what kind of outcome this can lead to that makes it a little bit of a looser cannon than having a primary is it's a little bit harder to predict the outcome of a mayoral race because everyone's second favorite candidate could win.
Yeah.
Right? Like, basically, by being the whole city's second favorite choice, you could win if there are two sort of core candidates that are divisive or evenly split.
Right. The idea is we're not picking, as we've heard in recent elections, the better of two bad candidates, you know? And hopefully we don't have any bad candidates. It'd be great to be flush with wonderful choices, you know? We would be excited for that. But yeah, here we go. Ranked choice voting, y'all.
Now they're going to have to run a pretty thorough communications campaign to make sure people know how to rank choice vote. Because you think about those little slips that come in your ballot that are bright yellow that are like, here's how to fill in the bubble. And it's like, this is going to be a lot more complicated than that. The Living Traditions Festival is back in downtown Salt Lake City, May 17th through 19th. And this is when I come alive. It is so easy to sell me on 3 days of Washington Square and Library Square converting to a global food court. And this festival has truly been one of my favorites for years now. Living Traditions convenes the diversity of artistic traditions, food heritage, music, and art from the many cultures that have made Utah their home. You can expect everything from live music and dance to hands-on workshops, a little shopping, Sundance film screenings, and Bohemian Brewery. There is something for the whole family, and it's free entry. Come celebrate all of the rich cultures that make up our community. Find more information on the festival and view the full program guide at livingtraditionsfestival.com or on Instagram and Facebook at SLC Living Trad. We talk a lot on this show about our city's crown jewels. What are the institutions that open doors in our community and regulate its pulse? I choose Salt Lake Community College, and it is a home for incredibly focused Salt Lakers. Nearly 80% of their students work while going to school, many full-time jobs. If I could do college all over again, I would not be 33 and sitting on these damn student loans. And slick students aren't. 80% graduate with little to no student loan debt or save thousands knocking out credits before transferring to a four-year institution. Every day, Salt Lake Community College is transforming lives and communities through education. If you want to learn something new, refine a trade, or pursue a higher degree for the first time, explore your options at slcc.edu. Study alongside hard workers, save precious money, and be one in a class of 19, not 100. One more big city announcement that we got this week that I'm really excited about. I think these things are in tandem. I think they were being clever in releasing these two bits of news together. So Salt Lake City officially exploring something that we have on this show asked for, Open Streets Forever, which is basically taking the summer Open Streets program where Main Street from South Temple to 400 South is closed. It becomes pedestrian only on, historically, it's been Friday, Saturday. Last summer, they did it Thursday through Sunday, which was really cool because all those bars and restaurants could do like Sunday fun day day events. Yeah, they close it down. They make it pedestrian only. And a lot of people asked last summer, like, guys, why can't we just do this forever? Like, let's just close Main Street. Like, let's just make it pedestrian.
Fewer cars are always better, I think, in our public spaces.
Right. And now the city is exploring it. They're actually hiring a consultant to look at what it would take to get that done. And they are accepting feedback from businesses and they're going through sort of the whole process. But it's kind of an exciting announcement. It could really shake up how our downtown looks and feels.
Here's my question. So as I understand it, the Trax train that runs along Main obviously would still run. Also, totally fine with that. I love the Trax train. But the cross street traffic, all the streets that cross Main Street, that will continue. And for me, I feel like that's actually the most concerning bit as a pedestrian. It's not walking along Main Street where I feel least safe. It's crossing 2nd South, 1st South, 3rd South. I understand why they can't shut those down, right? Because they connect to other parts of the city. But to me, like, that's what would make this truly pedestrian friendly.
I mean, I've been on pedestrian only Main Streets before where the way that they address that is it's pedestrian right of way basically forever. Like, there's no light. It's just people just go for it and they move and the cars have to abide. But yeah, you would have to train vehicles to abide. And I think that is one of the reasons that I think they're hiring a consultant and really like exploring this thoroughly is because there are logistics like that that are kind of concerning. I will say, like, we also can't assume that every business owner would be into this. Like, if you're on that kind of north part of Main Street, it is pretty quiet up there. And I wonder how much traffic you do get if you're like a Three Pines coffee shop from people who kind of just do, they pull in their car to like make a quick return at City Creek, or they're just driving up and they want to jump out and get a coffee or a pastry at Ava's or whatever and get back in the car and scoot away. Like, the north part of Main Street is pretty quiet. Like, we don't need a pedestrian only area in front of Cotopaxi after 6 p.m. Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, but if you also think about what's at the north part of Main Street, it's the temple, right? And I actually think that the church complex there would probably really benefit from having it be pedestrian only, especially come conference time 2 times a year, right? I mean, the streets are swarming with people during conference.
This is true, Emily. And also, given like the leaked plan for Temple Square that we all saw kind of floating around a couple weeks ago, which is quite extravagant for how they would like to convert that whole like top of Main and South Temple, then those things could kind of blend together. Also, something we've talked about on this show in the past is like the controversial sky bridge that connects City Creek above the street and how, like, even though I think it's wildly romantic, urban planners kind of wince at it because they're like, why would you get people off the street? Like, in what world?
Yeah.
And so would open streets maybe contribute to getting people back on the ground? I don't know. I will tell you. So the other news item that I mentioned that came along with this Open Streets announcement is that the city is starting a grant program for outdoor dining. And that's pretty cool because outdoor dining is definitely, as we come up here on the 3-year anniversary of the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, outdoor dining has been a real result of the pandemic that we've seen, and restaurants being able to spill out into the streets. And now the city's like, go for it. We love it. We want our restaurants spilling out into the streets. And we actually are creating a grant program in the amounts range, but around $10,000 to help you fund getting that set up permanently, a la, you know, Valters or the Alibi Patio. So those are both exciting things as we head into the summer. I will say my open streets dream, like the thing I would love to see tacked onto this proposal is, you know, the like free transit zone, how the tracks is, you know, how the tracks is free, like kind of shooting down Main there. I would like if the free zone extended to 9th. To Central 9th.
Girl, you're talking my language. You know you are. Yes, because the free fare zone ends at, I believe, Courthouse.
We need to go all the way to Central 9th because they are building something really cool, those businesses. And like what I want to do is I want to get a beer at Water Witch and then I want to hop on the free tracks and shoot up to Main. Like if you could create a scenario where Main Street is communicating with Central 9th in that way.
Genius.
Now we're cooking with gas.
If they're not going to give us free fare forever, if the legislature is not going to give us free fare forever, at least extend the free fare zone. I mean, downtown is the most natural place to do that. Listen, it's good for business. How about that, legislature?
Right. And we know that Salt Lake City's Downtown Alliance has said that one of their goals for downtown is to create a 36-hour city instead of a, whatever, 12-hour city, right? So basically, like, right now, downtown feels like a place people go to work, and they want downtown to feel alive round the clock. And so part of this proposal is also looking at the Gallivan Center and what we could change there. And I don't know, I love the idea that all these little like nooks in downtown will be kind of speaking to each other. That's my dream. And I hope it's heard.
Beautiful. So, brings a tear to my eye.
Beautiful. All right, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. What are you doing this weekend, Emily?
Well, Allie, it is daylight saving time, but this is the good one for us, right? I mean, like for us summer girls. Us people who do not thrive in winter. So do not forget to spring forward, set your clocks forward. This means that we get more daylight, or it feels like we get more daylight.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a placebo effect, right? If I woke up earlier, I would get more daylight, but I don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. My hairdresser at Lunatic Fringe, I love her, Brittany, but her grandmother is, I think, in her like 80s or 90s, and she has this like kind of ranch in Utah, and she does not participate in daylight savings time. So my hairdresser's grandmother is just like, as an individual, is staunchly opposed to the idea. She does not participate. So they, as a family,
have
to refer to her house as, yes, they refer to her house as ranch time. And she's like, we have been in so many family fights because like someone got ranch time wrong, and like we're meeting at grandma's at 6, but is it 5 or is it 7? I don't know. Depends on the time of year. Like, and I am just obsessed with like, first of all, I hope when I'm that age, I throw down the gauntlet that hard to where I'm like, I'm in my own time zone now, actually, world.
Real missed opportunity to not call it GMT, grandma mean time.
Okay. This weekend, I also want to say there is a cool thing that the county library is doing. They are doing a teen formal wear swap, of course.
Cool.
Prom is on the horizon, and prom is expensive. It is expensive for everyone. It is very expensive for a lot of young people who want to participate in the tradition, but it feels like every year prom gets more and more out of hand. I one time had a student that I mentored at a previous job call me and ask if I would give them $2,000 for prom, and I was like, if I had it, I would, but also prom is going to cost you $2,000?
Like, why? For what?
Yeah. Yeah. She was like, Miss Allie, can I have $2,000? And I was like, for what? And she was like, for the prom. And I was like, God help us. So Salt Lake County is doing a prom, basically dress swap. And guess what? If you've ever been a bridesmaid, you're holding on to a prom dress. It's as good as a prom dress. So bring down whatever taffeta, bring down former bridesmaids' dresses. If you've got something really fun, bring it down to the county library Saturday, tomorrow from 11 to 1 p.m. It's the County Library in Taylorsville that's doing the teen formal wear swap. It's at 4870 South 2700 West. And yeah, participate in helping ensure that all of our neighbor girlies can look their absolute best in their prom photos. What else this weekend? Oh, yeah. Good luck to the Real Salt Lake team. Their home opener is Saturday night.
Get it.
They're playing Austin. So, and apparently there's a major club announcement happening 2 hours before the game, which is probably going to be the announcement of the return of the Royals women's team. But I'm going.
Allie, you should take the train there. You should take the train there. Are you going to do it?
I'm going to.
It's actually a great ride.
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
I really like taking the train down there.
Well, I don't have a car, so.
Well, enjoy your travels enjoy the game.
Sounds good, Emily. I will see you Monday.
See you Monday.
That's all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Our lead producer is Emily Means. Our producer is Ivana Martinez. Our newsletter editor is Therina Ria. And our host is me, Ali Vallarta. Music is by the local band Mitochondria. We will be back Monday morning with more from around the city. Have a great weekend.